Hello and welcome to Chai Can't Even. This is Blake Smith, your host for today's episode of Chai Can't Even. And this is a very special episode in this series of Project Zion podcast. I am in Portland, Oregon, and I have the opportunity to sit down with a gentleman who is not our typical Chai Can't Even guest. If you're a listener of Project Zion podcast, you know that Chai Can't Even is normally a series where we talk to young adults about their journey in the church and why they've stayed. But my guest today is not a young adult, and he has been in the church for quite some time and has some great stories to tell. So I am here today with Tor Nielsen. He said I can call him Tor, but it's it is pronounced Ture.
Mm-hmm.
That might be the only Norwegian word that I can say correctly, but he helped me with that. So welcome, Tor.
Nice to be here. Nice to see you and have a conversation with you. Would you like to know that I'm here in Portland? I actually spend most of my time in Michigan. I was a mental health director there for 20 years. I came here because my son is a professor at Lewis and Clark College, and he had all my grandkids, and my wife couldn't wait. So I retired at 59, and I've been here ever since, and I love it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me. Like I said in the introduction, we're usually talking with young adults who've only been in the church for a little while, but sitting and looking at pictures with you and just imagining that you have some great stories to tell. That's why I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So I'm just going to kind of turn it over to you, and I'll probably ask some questions based on some things that you say, but tell us about your journey, how you got into Community of Christ, and a little bit about your travel from that point to this point.
I need to start with my grandfather.
Okay.
He was converted in the early 1900s. Peter Museus was a missionary, we call them. It would later be called appointees. Anyway, he came to Porsgrunn. Actually, he was from Porsgrunn. And he went to, he immigrated to the United States, got familiar with the church over here, got converted, and was sent back as a missionary. And he came to Porsgrunn, where my parents were, grandparents were living. And he, actually, my grandfather's brother-in-law was interested. He had heard about Peter Museus and so forth. And he was downtown on the town square holding sermons, I presume they were called. And he tried to get my grandfather to attend. The grandfather, no, it's just, I'm not going to listen to those Mormons. Besides, what would my neighbor think? He had some problems. And finally, I guess one day, this guy, his brother-in-law, came with Peter Museus into his house. But before that, actually, he had gone to, reluctantly go on to listen to him. And Peter Museus had a chair. He would get on the town square, he would step on his chair, and he began to preach.
Wow.
At that time, my grandfather said, that was kind of interesting, but not really that interesting. That after that, he came to his home. And he started listening and listening. And he got so excited about the whole thing. So in the middle of it, my grandmother said, "Nils, get down to the well and get some water." And my grandfather said, "I took the bucket, I ran down there. I didn't even feel I was on the ground." He said, "I thought I was half on the ground." He says, I was so excited. And I, on the way down, he says, "I will accept this gospel, whatever it's going to cost me."
Wow.
That was my grandfather. Anyway, he became actually the leader of the Norwegian mission, locally. So anyway, to get to my baptism, of course, my father was also baptized and became a member of the priesthood. My grandfather at that time was elder. My father was a priest, and Lentz, Apostle Lentz, I don't know if you heard of Lentz or not,
Yes, I have.
came to Norway, and I decided to be baptized. And we went out in the fjords of Kragerø. That's a town that we actually ended up living in. And I was baptized by him. And that afternoon, I was confirmed by him and my grandfather.
By Apostle Lenz.
Yes. And that was quite an experience. I didn't know that much English, but it was almost like I understood most of it. It was quite an experience. And then, of course, at that time, it was somewhat afterwards, it was probably a couple of years, they start sending missionaries again for the first time since the Great Depression to Norway. And Jim Everett was the first one. And Jim took me under his wing, so to speak. And I went, they had cottage meetings and so forth with slides and so forth. And I usually operate a slide projector and what have you. Actually, one of my cousins told me Jim Schaefer, which is a German shepherd. In
Oh,
Norway, it's called Schaefer. It's a shepherd, German shepherd.
sure.
So I was his, I didn't take it as a defense. But anyway, so we were together as often as we could, although he had a lot of responsibility on. And he said to me, "You should go to Grayson College." And I said, "Oh, I don't think so, because I only had 8 years of education."
Oh.
And I took some night courses and so forth because I was an electrician or learning to become an electrician at the time. And but anyway, I went on his faith, I guess. His mother was a guarantor, I guess they call it,
Sure.
took care of financially. If something would happen to me, they could send me back on her money. So anyway, I came over and to Grayson College and went there 4 years in the religion curriculum, which was relatively new at the time. Anyway, I could go further, but there I am.
So, how old were you when you were baptized?
I think I was 17.
Okay, and had your father been in the church for a couple of years by that point, or was he new in the church?
Before I was, he was in church before I was born. But during the Second World War, and we were occupied by the Germans, it was, there were, we had some meetings maybe once a month or so. And we would go to somebody's home of the people. And I was the only youth at the time. And I would have been about 7 or 8 years old. And I would go to those meetings. And they had long, very long prayer services. And we were kneeling next to a chair so we could hold on to a chair. And there were some long, long prayers. And he and I walked, oh, quite a few, maybe a couple of miles to get there to this place. So I was early involved in that sense, but it was very well seldom, we had those meetings and there was nothing I really could relate to. And so I don't know, I guess, excuse, but or I should say that my sister got baptized much earlier, but at the time I was probably around 8, but I hadn't had that much experience. But I said I really felt a spirit during that baptism. I really felt really good about it, and I went to my grandfather and says, "I want to be baptized too." And he said, "Well, I think we should wait," he said. He figured I was not mature enough or didn't have enough exposure to the church or whatever it was. So I was postponed, and that from that time on till I was 17, nothing much happened. But I do remember that baptism actually was the confirmation. I remember, I guess, more than baptism, where I felt that good spirit of the Lord.
That's a wonderful story. Is there something specific that happened at 17 that you felt like you were ready to be baptized, or you had your grandfather's approval, or what changed at that point?
Well, I guess I listened to the sermon, and we were talking, the people coming in. We had a number of church leaders coming over the time and so forth. And I just came to the point where I just felt this is the time.
You were ready.
I was ready. And yeah, it was a good experience.
So you go to Graceland and you're part of the religion department,
Yes.
religious education. And how did that work? You say you had 8 years of education, some trade experience, and then go straight to university.
Well, that was a good experience. Not well, maybe I shouldn't say good. It was a difficult experience. I came to Grace, and of course they couldn't schedule me. They couldn't put me in any specific place. So I was unclassified for the first year at Graceland. So I have never been a freshman.
Okay.
But I was able to, with the dictionary and a few other things, I was actually able to pass through the first year.
How was your English at that point?
I had come a lot better. I had spent a year in Pittsburgh before this,
Okay.
and I worked there. So I had my English had come up a lot of, so I had a, my spoken English, my written English wasn't that good, but my spoken English, I think, was relatively good. Vocabulary was not the broadest in the world, but
Were you working in the electrician trade in Pittsburgh? Okay.
yes. Anyway, so I then went into the my sophomore year, and by that time I had my first wife, Marjorie Richards, Marjorie Ann Nilsson. And we had some wonderful 45 years together when she died of a blood clot after a knee surgery. Anyway, going back to Grayson, I went on then and went into the third and the fourth year. Actually, I was on the dean's list for a couple of years too, so I guess I must have been okay.
That would be the good dean's list, right?
Yeah,
You weren't
the
on
good
that.
deans.
Good.
Yeah. So anyway, I graduated from there, went on to University of Michigan for my master's degree.
Okay. And what was your master's in?
In social work, clinical social work.
Okay. Were you married by that time?
Yes, I got married in my senior year. No, I got married in my. I finished my sophomore year. In my junior year, we were married. My wife just graduated. She was 2 years ahead of me. So there would have been. I was going into my junior year when I got married, and she was teaching in the Longmont schools while I was finishing my degree.
Okay. And when you finished your degree, did you stay in Michigan or did you go back to Norway?
No, I went to University of Michigan. I got my master's degree in social
Right.
work. Yeah.
And when you finished that?
Yeah. No, I stayed in this country.
Okay.
And probably this is a disappointment to Jim Everett. He probably wanted me to go back to
He thought he had trained a good missionary for Norway,
Yeah.
huh?
Well, nobody ever approached me either, by the way.
Yeah.
So they, I don't know. Anyway, from there on, I went into the field of social work. Spent a couple of years in Toledo, Ohio, and then spent a number of time in the guidance clinic in Detroit. And then we went back to Norway for a year. because I wanted to find out, do I really want to stay in the States or do I want to go back to Norway? And I thought of kids and so forth. Anyway, the kids went to school and they learned the language, which was good. And I decided, actually, my mother said to me, you better go back. And said, and she didn't want me to go back necessarily. You're going to lose your kids to the church if you stay here. There was not much activities or anything, and there were nothing for the kids, anything like that. But I think about the reason I already been accepted by the University of Michigan at the time. And so we went back, and I got mixed up a little, I think.
That's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I already got my degree.
So you went back between Graceland and University of Michigan. You went back to Norway.
We went back just for a visit at that
Okay,
time. It was the first time we went back, so
okay.
my wife could they could meet my wife and so forth. She was already pregnant. So Eric was born in Norway. Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah. But it was a few years afterwards when we went back. I was told we spent a whole year there. And that's when that story came where we went back and decided to stay then. And I got an offer to become, I came back as a school social worker actually in the thumb of Michigan. And after about a couple of years, the opening of a direct executive director of the Community Mental Health Service became available. And I applied and they accepted me. And I spent 20 years there.
wow. Yeah.
And then I retired, I say, at age 59. And I never looked back.
Yeah, no regrets.
No regrets. No regrets.
Very good. Well, what was your role? What were your roles in the church, and how was church playing a role in your life during those
Well, it's
years?
kind of interesting. Of course, in Norway, I don't know if they ever call people. Because anyone that's been called by the missionary that leaders coming in. So I was called in when I first came to Pittsburgh in 1957, and during the time I was there, I was called a deacon. So when I came to Grayson College, I was a deacon, and part of my responsibility was to make sure that the people exited and entered. Exited the church after services, and I was staying at the end with the little paper. I went like this for the next line, and then next one.
Oh,
Anyway, then after that, when I was there was I was going back for my junior year, and I got a letter in the mail saying I was called to eldership. And I was ordained by Roy Chauvel at the time. And Lloyd Young was assisting. And at that time, of course, I finished my school and so forth. And I came back to Michigan and I was in charge of some senior high class at one time. And eventually, I became pastor of the congregation there. Spent a couple of years, and then I was asked to take over the responsibility as the Eastern Michigan district president. At that time, I was in charge of a number of junior youth camps. And as well as charge of a number of reunions. There were some headaches with all those things, but it was also very, very good. It was a good experience. It's Blue Water, and overheard of Blue
Okay,
Water.
I have, yes.
It all took place at Blue Water. So that was and after that, a number of years, I was a district president for 5 years, and then just a few years afterwards, I was called an evangelist. Which is no, it's a terminal degree.
Yeah, that it has a reputation for that, but it's such an important role in the
Yeah.
church.
Yes, it is. It's very, very, very important. it's kind of an awesome responsibility, I think. Anyway, I took it very, very serious because I want to be able to express myself in a way that was meaningful and also as true to the understanding I had
Did you get to
by the
do
Spirit,
a
right?
number of blessings?
Yes, I did a number of blessings.
Great. Yeah.
Right. My father had been called to evangelist before that and was ordained at the conference, our world conference,
World Conference.
back to what they call them General Conference.
Okay.
And I interpret for him the blessing. So I was up front there when they were laying the, they I was laying hands, they were laying their hands on him. And as they spoke, I would
Interpret.
interpret, yeah. Which was quite an experience too.
I bet. You
Yeah.
also mentioned having interpreted for President Wally B. Smith
Yes.
at some point.
Yeah. He came to Norway at one point. We had a new hymnal that was, like I said, dedicated. And he came, and well, Marooch was there too at the time, and she was probably the person who arranged that. And he was giving this one sermon that I translated for him.
So you've crossed paths with some pretty big names in the church over the years, with Donald Lentz and Roy Scheville and
Yeah,
Wally
yeah.
B. and Velma Rusch.
Actually, Don Lentz ordained me a deacon.
Oh,
Yeah.
yes. So you had shown me some pictures before of conferences in Norway, I believe. Were
Yeah,
those during
Norway,
your
and in, it's also
and in
in
Germany?
Germany.
In Germany, okay. And were those during your childhood, or were those trips back during your adulthood?
No, they were during my childhood,
Okay.
adolescent,
Okay.
actually.
So kind of a regional conference.
Yeah, the one in Hanover, Germany, was the full European one, and that was the first, actually, real big meeting I've been to. Our conference weren't too bad. I mean, they can go to about 30 people or so, maybe 35, but this one is a much, much larger. And actually, during one of those conferences, meetings, I was up front. We were supposed to give a testimony about our experience, where we came from, our experience, and so forth. And we hold on to our flags as
Oh.
we did that, and all our flags of the various country was located up there. I held on to it. I was so nervous with all these people, everything, that I said to myself, "I'm glad
Don't
I
hold on
had
to. Was
that
your flag waving from your shaking?
that might have been."
Oh,
But
that's
it went
funny.
well. Yeah, it was it was quite an experience. But my most, except for those experiences I had during baptism, most of my real church experiences came after Jim Everett came back. That was the first missionary that to come back to Norway. And he actually sent me a number of books. The Call of Evening was a book
I've read that.
that he sent me. I remember that. Yeah.
Yes, I have a copy of that in my library.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite a thing. Yeah, both V.D. Rutsch and Hunker, they're two people. I don't know if you heard either one of them. They were missionaries in Norway before actually the Great Depression. And that then the economy went so bad that they couldn't send anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a bad time for church as well as the rest of the world.
So, having been in the church all these years, I know for myself, I don't have that kind of history, and I have seen a lot of change in the church. You have witnessed significant change in the church since your baptism.
You know, I have often said I'm not in the same church anymore. I don't mean by that the spirit isn't there, all that. But there's been so many changes, unbelievably changes over the years. Just unbelievable. Good changes, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, good changes. You know, we used to believe that we were the only true church in the world, and nobody else. They were not really, they might have some, but not the truth, the full
Right.
truth. That's how we were. You know, we were
Sure.
very prideful.
I remember that.
Yeah. And anyway, and at that time, of course, it's all men, and often older men, at least in the greater leadership. And so I remember some of the conferences in the beginning. You know, they had not the best of chairs. They came real good, though.
Right.
And the unfortunate thing was, President. Boy, I'm blocking on that one. Israel A. Smith.
The last.
Israel A. Smith.
Oh, Israel A. Smith. Okay. Yeah.
He was killed on the way to Breslau at one time.
Yeah.
And so there was a conference fairly soon afterwards. That was my first conference. Interesting thing about him, too. I met him the first time when I came to first day actually in Pittsburgh. They had a men's retreat. And I was not a priest, but I was invited to come there. And during that time, we had some discussion, and I talked to Israel, and he said to me, "You know," he says, "my mother was a Norwegian."
Really?
Yeah. Norwegian heritage, anyway.
Right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It was interesting. Anyway.
So you say that for the most part, the changes have been good. Can you think of in all of the changes that have taken place, something that really felt good for you in terms of the progress of the church?
Well, I think that probably one of the more difficult things, but something that actually have been the best thing as the women came into the priesthood.
Yes.
As I look around today and look at the leadership from the way top, the president,
Yes.
to the various pastors and so forth, they're women. And I thought, what would we have done if we had these good women there providing that ministry? But it was a difficult time.
Yes.
It was a splitting of some of the people leaving. And it was sad. But I think in the long run, it was good. The other thing I think that is to me very important is the principles. You know, the fact that we are concerned about peace. We're concerned about the environment. We're concerned about people, how they live, and the ministry to them, not just spiritual ministry, but physical ministry. And I think a basic belief right now should be shouted from the hilltops. And I would think, maybe biasly, so that people ought to respond to that kind of message. However, we live in an affluent society. And I have learned a long time ago that where there are need, people are much more responsive to something beyond themselves, to the spirit. And when you live in a place where you have everything, and you're so busy with all kinds of activities, including Sunday activities, then you know become less important. And we are happy, but just contribute a little, some money, yeah, okay, fine. But the real full involvement is more difficult, I think, during an affluent era.
I think that's very, very wise feeling and sense there, because I would agree that that's the case. It's been my experience as I've worked in the church that those who have experienced rock bottom ex life or struggle are more open to receiving the good news than those who essentially live in good news most of their life, and we would call that now a state of privilege. So it's there's less need for God, or at least that's what we perceive at times. So I have a question for you. This I'm going to put you on the spot here. So if you had a 17-year-old who was interested in the church now, was considering baptism, you think back about your experiences, what might you tell that individual who was coming to you and asking for your advice? Should they be a part of the church? Should they be baptized?
Well, by then time, of course, they have been in church, they have been in all kinds of classes. I knew all about
Right.
it. And they, like most people that time, they want to participate in the communion back in those days. You couldn't, of course, because you were not a member.
Right.
And so when you were 8, they knew they could do that. That was one thing. But they also knew that that's the time to baptize. And so they were baptized, and there were no questions about
I don't think that changed a lot until we were more open with communion. I remember children saying, "When am I going to get to take the communion?" And couldn't wait to be baptized for that purpose.
Let me tell you one story about
Sure.
that. We have some very good friend, black friends in Toledo. We met them in Toledo, and we befriended them, and we did a lot of things. Actually, my kids refer to them as uncle and aunt. And they came to us a number of times in Harbor Beach when we lived there after we had moved from Toledo into Harbor Beach, Michigan. And they came to church. Lo and behold, there was a communion service. And the pastor at the time was quite conservative. And of course, they were not served. They were so disappointed that they never came back to our church. We went to their church, partake of their communion
Right.
even. And I was so angry and so hurt that these good people, good Christian people, committed as much as anyone else around there, better than maybe some of them. They just. Yeah, that was sad, but that's changed, thank the good Lord.
Yes.
We
It's a
have open
shame that
communion and it's time for it.
I think we've come a long way in understanding even our sacraments in a way that is more inclusive.
Oh
And
yes.
now we can use them as a ways to bless others in a way that I believe God would want us to. So that's, I agree. I absolutely love that. So what are your hopes for the church as you see us moving forward? You went from, you mentioned being in a church in a time where it was only men in leadership and older men, and I would add older white men for the most part. Now we are in a church with a very diverse leadership, with our first African in the presidency, our first female president, a very blended Council of 12. What are your hopes going forward?
I have hopes and I have fears.
Okay, give me both.
Give me your fears first.
Okay.
Fear is all area of expenses, money.
Yes.
That concerns me because I don't think financially we are in the best of shape when we have to sell some valuable things like the temple, the Curtin Temple. So that's my worry,
Yes.
and I do worry about My hopes are quite different and much more positive. I think now that we actually, we reflect more and more the congregation, the world, the country in the sense of participation. When I first started, you hardly ever see a black person. And of course, except when World Conference, and after a while they came from Africa.
Right.
And that was good. It was good. And now, and I'm, I see when you're not so into yourself, you're more open and outwardly. I think that's so important. I think the biggest problem now is how we as get the message out in a broader form. And I don't know. I guess maybe that's part of my concern too, that we need to find some way where we can be exposed now. Beyond the Wall, we listen to this every Sunday, which is a
Right.
very good program. And I understand there's another program going on too, over the internet.
There are several ministries online. I know that my area in Chicago has one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Anyway, that's good. That's good. And we reach beyond the borders too that way.
Right.
That's good. But that's still a concern. And but I do I see the potential. We have a great potential. I do believe we have great potential. And we just need to expose our faith, our commitments to the greater world, I guess, to the outside our immediate. And we are going beyond the wall more and more, I think. When I earlier it was only in the wall. We didn't go outside the wall, but except for summertime for reunions. When you just preach to the people that are already there, you all heard you more and more. You like to be able to have the message beyond those people who already heard. And that's still a challenge. And I'm hoping and praying that we're going to make that well.
So you talk about change being good, and I know that that is very difficult for some people making change.
Yes.
Can you point to something in your life or your family that you feel made you be able to be more open to change when others might not have been so open?
Well, I think I have to be honest. When I came to Graceland, I knew the church. I just want to know some more about the church. I was, and I tell you, I had to really relearn an awful lot. And a lot of things I never heard of before. I got the religious curriculum that were probably, I think, 30, 40 years ahead of the rest of the church in some ways.
Wow.
I mean, they were, so I was exposed to some many things at that point. What was the question?
So just what made you open to change?
All right, Grayson. Grayson opened my mind. My wife, Marge, opened my mind.
Wonderful.
She was 2 years ahead of me. She was already in the religion curriculum.
She had already been exposed to the.
Yes.
Do you remember who some of the professors were in those days?
Lloyd Young, Roy Chauvel, names
Oh, that's
I
good.
know, yeah. Anyway, they were one of some of them.
And the population of students at Graceland was a larger percentage members of the
I would
church.
say it would be 90% plus. And we had services and so forth every Sunday morning. We had always service before we went to our lunch and so forth. And we did a lot of that. We had the church. activities and groups and so forth. And there were the seniors, junior seniors were had leadership responsibility in smaller groups. We were really pretty well organized. So it was good. So, no, I always say that. And some people think I am too broad-minded, probably, but in some ways I'd be also narrow-minded, maybe too. So. But yeah, I being 80 years old, I think I'm fairly open.
I sounds like it very much. Sounds like it very much. I want to ask one other question about Graceland because I don't know what it was like at the time. Did they have the house system when you were there? Like, were you on what house were you a part of?
I was
Do they have like
no,
Cheville
yeah, I
and
know. We didn't have actual name for them at
oh,
the
okay.
time. No, I was on the fourth floor of the old guns, not the
Not
upstairs. Yeah,
the
yeah.
new.
But we had clubs. I
Okay. Okay.
was an FNP.
An FMP. What
Yes.
is that?
I shouldn't tell you. And I
Okay.
don't even remember all of it. It was secret, but it was something about fraternity and, I've forgotten even the whole thing, to tell you the
It's
truth.
probably
But it
better
had
that
to do
way.
with
That's a sneak.
fraternity anyway. I knew that was part of it. And there were COGS, and there were a number of other ones. There were the Gimpers was one. They were the people that got in trouble sometimes. They put a flag on one of the granary down in Lamuna and stuff,
Oh,
and
okay.
they got campus. Oh no, the women get campus. They got they couldn't have any activities or parties or anything like this for a couple of months or whatever. I mean, there was
Right.
something. Yeah, there were some punishment that went out at the time too. Of course, smoking was very, very bad.
Right.
And so, but I'm sure there was some snuck one. But I understand now, smoking is probably mild.
That if smoking were the only issue, that would be not a bad problem, right?
But then there are also a lot of people outside of church there too. So, yeah, it was a good time, I think. I tell you, I learned so much the first 4 years there that I can't believe how much I grew. I was so naive.
That's a great accomplishment then that for you, probably to help you as you move forward, but also on behalf of those who were a part of helping you on that journey. Are there any stories that I haven't asked about or that you want to tell our audience?
No, I think the important thing was that, well, I don't know if that's important, but our family became the leadership. My grandfather was always, of the local people, I'm talking about the people living in the country, was always, as long as I lived, the leader. It was in Kragerø, the town I lived in. My uncle was in charge of the Oslo, or Oslo as they call it in English. And the third group that we had was in Porsgrunn, and my father's cousin was in charge. So the Nilsson's influence actually probably was a little too much in some cases. But a good number of the people. Well, I guess I can tell you some of the sadder part. We did have some people, not very many, in Stockholm, or at least in Sweden, and some in Denmark. They eventually disappeared. We never saw them. We did have some meetings earlier, but at least by the time I came back from Graceland, they were gone. And there are no activities in Kragerø or Porsgrunn. There is only a group left now, and that's in Oslo.
Okay.
I don't think there's much growth, if any, there. So I am concerned about what's going to happen. But affluence is really great in Norway,
Yeah.
I'll tell you. And people are pretty satisfied, and Most of them, if they don't belong to anything, that belong to the state church. I mean, it's a traditional thing.
Right.
It may not be now, but it was, and when I was, you get baptized, and you all get baptized as
You get
babies, of course,
right.
and now you're in, and you can wait for the confirmation, which comes when you're about 14, 13, 14 years old. Then you get all those nice gifts and so forth. I got none of that, of course, because I didn't get confirmed by the regular time and so
In the
forth.
state church.
And it was interesting, but it was a more you
No,
know.
no. Just wanted to know if you had other stories that
Oh,
our
yeah.
listeners would be interested in hearing from all of those years.
Well, really, I guess the most important part there, of course, was actually in the activities that we had from the baptisms, from the various conferences we had usually once a year. And then we had the youth camp. And then later on, of course, that's after I came back. They had a reunion. So they had reunions for a number of years before I got back to. And that's where most activity was. Oh, I should say that one thing. The year before I left, actually very soon before I left, we had an evangelist by number, Entwistle, came into our conference that we had in Oslo. And he, under inspiration, spoke to my father and to myself. It was a very encouraging, I say, spirit-filled moment for me. I am sure my tears were coming. And he told me that I would be a leader in the church.
And it was right.
Yes. Yes, he was right. That was probably one of the most significant experiences in that sense. You know, when you think about it, some things are picking back
Right.
up again. I haven't thought of that for quite a while.
That's wonderful. Did so at that time, did you feel like, oh my goodness, that's a heavy burden, or was it something that you received as a joyful note?
I didn't felt as a burden at all. I felt as something I was looking forward to.
Wonderful.
Actually,
Neat.
it's interesting, but at that time, by that time, Jim Emmett had been there and
Yeah.
had his influence on me. And I think I was ready for something. And it was not too, I think it was next year I left for the States. So that's must have been in 56, because in 57 I came to United States and spent almost a year in Pittsburgh before I entered Graceland,
Wow.
which I needed for language
Just
purposes.
to get settled in the
Yeah,
United
yeah.
States, yeah.
I had very little exposure to the language. Most of my exposure to the language was actually for the people coming from the United States for the church.
Were you living with a church family when you moved to Pittsburgh?
Yes, I was. Yeah. Frieda and Leah Brunner.
Okay.
She came from Germany as a young woman too. And she made the best of breads. Oh, yeah. They were so good to me, so really good. The only thing they didn't have air conditioning. There was some hot days I experienced.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, it has been such a joy to sit and to hear your stories, and I'm sure there are lots and lots more if given the time. But thank you for taking the time to sit down and share your stories with us.
Well, I'm happy to do that. Actually, it's kind of fun sometimes because I even started reliving some of my own experiences in the process.
I can only hope that I will be able to tell stories like that when I get to my 80s. So, Well, thank you also to all of our listeners. We always appreciate you taking a part of your day to spend with us here at Project Zion Podcast. I'm Blake Smith, and you've been listening to Chai Can't Even with special guest Tor Nielsen. We appreciate it, and we hope to see you or have you join us again in the near future. Take care and have a great day.